हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 76. Srila Sridhar Swami explains this verse as follows. The Lord says, "You will know the Supreme Brahman, having received mercy from me." To obtain a particle of mercy of the Lord means that the jnani performed mixed devotional service previously. The Lord bestows mercy of bhakti yoga to that jnani who gives up avidya and vidya, who gives up jnana and accepts pure bhakti. That person who prefers jnana and gives up bhakti and enthusiastically pursues Brahman, though he is guru for thousands of jnanis and studies scripture and practices yoga for a long time, does not know the true nature of the Lord. So, to be able to discriminate the position of the Lord, then there has to be bhakti. So there may be mixed devotional service. But as one progresses in the process, then one is willing to, as one understands, one willing to give up that pursuit of jnana in terms for bhakti. Then that person then comes to the platform of pure devotional service. But if someone maintains the attachment for the jnana and gives up bhakti, then even though they may be very respected guru for so many other jnanis and be well read in the scriptures, then they will never actually understand the Lord. Because the Lord, being independent, he's understood through bhakti. That's his prerequisite. Because the point is knowing the Lord means you'll interact with the Lord. He's going to interact on the basis of relationship or rasa. So unless that's the position, then why will he reveal himself for us to do what? Right? The jnani realizes the Lord, he has no bhakti, what will we do with that? Does that make sense? It's like a 3-year-old winning the lottery or something. What will they do with it? They have no idea. Right? Buy 1,000 kilos of, peanut butter or something, what will they do with it? So that's the whole point, is that's why it's not revealed. You can say, oh, no, but you could. But, in the same sentence, you could also say the cow could jump over the moon. Right? But you always have to remember is that, do you ever see a cow jumping over a full moon? No, it's always a partial moon, just a sliver. Because if it's a full moon, it's too tall, they can't quite get over. But if it's just a partial, then they can get through. Right? So you can say anything you like. That's the whole point. People can say anything. But God being independent, then he decides who he's going to interact with. So only those who want to interact, then he reveals. So as it is, they worship him as jnana. He's coming to them and revealing himself as knowledge. But that's as far as it gets. It doesn't go beyond that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the Lord reciprocates with everyone, and since the jnani is only interested in knowledge, not a personal relationship, therefore they cannot understand the personal relationship. It's that simple. If they were practicing bhakti in their pursuance of jnana, then they'll start to get a glimmer of that, then seeing the superiority of that position over Brahman, over liberation, giving up the desire for liberation, then the Lord can reveal himself. Isn't that so? Yes.
Can we say that the jnana process is mainly ascending process?
Jnana basically is ascending. Karma and jnana are both ascending. It's just how far they'll ascend. Karma can ascend up to the heavenly planets, and that's where it stops. And jnana can ascend up to the Brahman platform, and then it stops. So only bhakti goes beyond. So, and the potency of ascension is bhakti. So in other words, you practice bhakti, it moves towards the Lord. You don't practice bhakti, you move away from the Lord. So if one is moving upwards, that means there must be that element of bhakti there. The difficulty is that bhakti is only for the purpose of karma or jnana. Right? So it'll be bhakti Mr. Karma, bhakti Mr. Jnana. So it will elevate them, but the problem is once they get what goal they're looking for, they'll give up the bhakti. So that's why it's not considered it's not seen as devotional. Right? It can only work with devotion, but you don't call it devotional. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that that only through proper devotional service as coming in the parampara, that will reveal Krishna. Otherwise, these others, the bhakti mixed with karma and jnana, will reveal the results of karma and jnana. They will not reveal the results of bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Studying Veda is jnana only.
Studying Veda depends what your purpose is. All depends on purpose. If it's simply knowledge, then it's jnana. If studying the Veda, if it's for fruit of benefit, like Jaimini, then it's karma. And if studying the Veda, it's in connection with pleasing Krishna, then it becomes bhakti. Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma, or in another life, wherever I take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even among the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In the first verse of this chapter, Brahma expressed the excellence of the Lord's sweetness. Seem to have a chorus going. In the first verse of this chapter, Brahma expressed the excellence of the Lord's sweetness. In the second and 13th verse, he, praising the Lord's power, exhibits a mixture of bhakti and jnana. In the third verse, he concludes that bhakti is superior. In the 8th verse, he shows the supremacy of pure kevala bhakti to Krishna. In the 27th and 90th verse, 19th, okay, I was going to say, he derides kevala jnana. In the 4th and 5th verses, Brahma shows the uselessness of kevala jnana and the success of kevala bhakti. And the success of kevala bhakti. In the 28th and 29th verses, he discusses jnana mixed with bhakti. In the 24th verse, he discusses the shanta bhakti. And in the 13th verse, he discusses dasya bhakti. After this, from the 31st verse, Brahma, having fallen into the ocean of Krishna's sweetness, praises the devotees immersed in raga, vatsalya, and other intimate relationships. This is the outline of Brahma's prayers. But so he's opening with the sweetness, he's ending with the sweetness. In there then he brings up this point of jnana and its inferiority to bhakti. And then especially kevala jnana means exclusive jnana, then that's not going to reveal the Lord at all. Jnana mixed with bhakti, then to that degree that the bhakti is there, there'll be some revelation. But then he points out that pure bhakti gives the best result. Nothing else actually gives the good result. And then he brings it to this point where then he himself, having surrendered to the Lord, now he wishes to be in that particular mood of sweetness like all these other devotees in Vrindavan. Lord Brahma continued, "O Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children." Right? Because that's what he was doing while he was expanding himself during these, the Brahma Vimahan Leela. So how fortunate are they? So he came around to do some tricks to test Krishna's position, but from that he didn't get the benefit, but all the residents of Vrindavan did. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. How greatly, so all the rules and regulations of the scriptures and the way of the yajnas and that, the technical points of scripture is not what pleases Krishna. It's the bhakti in which it's performed. Because one can say, see, we don't have to do all these yajnas. But we see that we've spent quite a few of the previous chapters in Nanda Maharaj arranging very nice arrangements for nice yajnas and abhishekas and big festivals and feeding devotees and giving charity to the Brahmins. So that means, yes, we are supposed to do it. But the point is it's that the yajna is done is not what pleases Krishna. That is done with bhakti that pleases Krishna. Right? That's the whole point we're saying. That's being brought out. There's no... How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. 31. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 32, the Bhagavad Arkramichimala, chapter 6, entitled, "Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationship with the Lord, Bhagavat Rasa Tattvam," which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakura's book. Yeah, so the residents of Vrindavan, they're, because they're absorbed in relationship with the Lord, therefore their position, what they're tasting, is then very, very special. Right? Others then, if anything connected to the Lord, will have its specialness. But those who are engaging in bhakti, then that will be the most special. And then we see those who are so surrendered, like the residents of Vrindavan, that gives the highest transcendental taste in rasa. So all the levels of rasa are all there in relationship to the Lord. But those who had that surrender of the Brajabasis, it's the most intimate and most special. Yet even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, the footnote is not completed. Oh, I see. I thought it was just another... Okay. Also in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 192, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, "Even if there is some seeming rasa bas, if the stai bhava is very exalted and powerful, then there is no rasa bas. Then the rasas are properly manifest. An example of a very exalted and powerful primary rasa negating the possibility of rasa bas is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam." Because you have is that, like the parental rasa or the friendship rasa, they're technically on one level enemies. Because how do you play, laugh, joke, roll around on the ground when the parents are around? Right? And when the parents are around, how do everybody has to behave properly? You understand? So that means the you're dealing with the stai bhava, right? So the mood of how you see Krishna, right? So the cowherd boys will see Krishna as their equal, no awe, no reverence, nothing, just equals. And the parents, there's no awe and reverence; they just see themselves as Krishna's parents. Right? So now, these two Stai Bhavas, so now, they, both, for all rasas, then the aspect is Krishna is the is the Vishaya, and the devotee is the Ashraya. But also we see in the and it's just a matter of which way you're going in the rasa, right? So now then you'll have certain aspects of Krishna that will inspire the rasa, right? And then having been inspired, then the Anubhava. Then the Anubhava is what you would like to do. Right? So seeing Krishna so nicely, he's so wonderful, so clever, so attractive, then the parents, what do they want to do? They want to pick him up, they want to embrace him, they want to smell his head, they want to, you know, caress him, you understand, protect him. Now the cowherd boys see the same boy and his cleverness and this and there. What's their Anubhav? They want to laugh, they want to joke, they want to, you know, run around. How are these two rasas going to be friends? Because the effect of the Anubhav is so different that they can't coexist. Right? So when the cowherd boys are in Mother Jashoda's place, they have to be subservient to the parental rasa. They can't just practice their own rasa. It means within taste they can, but it'll take on more just the laughing and joking part that is also tasteful, that can be done at the dinner table. You know, like Maru Mangal will joke about how that Bharat Muni has then described the Sattvika Bhavas, the eight, you know, existential physical symptoms of the devotee in ecstasy, as eight. But he, you know, disagrees. He thinks there's only six. And then he goes to explain them. You know, when I see the prasad, you know, cooked by Mother Jashoda, then I'm astonished, and then smelling, my hairs stand on end, and then, you know, goes through the whole thing until finally then when he tastes it, he's stunned. Right? Like this. So he leaves off, you know, death and those kinds of, and dread, like that kind of stuff. So this way, so these are, you know, pleasant discussions you can have at the table. So in this way, the rasa is going on, but it becomes subservient to the parental rasa. So you understand? So it actually becomes like a sanchari bhava to the stai bhava Mother Jashoda. Right? It's just something there to assist. So it's like the secondary rasas, then they assist the primary rasa. So in the same way is that it becomes like that. That's why they're not friends. Or the conjugal rasa, the parental rasa, same thing. Does that make sense? But now the parental rasa and the servant rasa, now that's very nice. The parents see that, they want some, you know, something to be done. The servants are there to do that. You understand? So depending upon the application, then all these rasas, they have their friends in that. And so when you mix things that don't go together, then that may be called rasabhas. Not that they're all there as rasabhas, but here is that... Yeah, the Supreme Brahman has become their friend. So this thing of Shantaras and then all these other aspects mixed together, it's not a problem. Because the prominence of the particular rasa takes the precedent, and these other secondary aspects that may be considered rasabhas then become subservient to bringing out a specific flavor. So it doesn't have a problem. Just like Yudhishthira Maharaj, like we said, friendship and parental is not exactly your best friends in rasa, but his mood, his rasa, his stai bhav with Krishna, then is that of parental friendship and servitorship. Right? So, because of the particular nature of the devotee, that perfection, it's not rasabhas. So that's why the study is there, so that one understands what actually is proper and what's not. So you have these mixes sometimes that they just don't. See, Maharaj Ugrasena is also parental and friendship. Does that make sense? It'll be more parental, less on friendship. Yudhishthira will be more friendship, less on parental. Baladeva also is friendship and parental. Right? But the parental will be the smallest. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
When you have, you know, the Sakya and the Vatsala, you know, this particular thing that the Sakya has to be subservient. So similarly, in the conjugal has to be subservient. So,
yeah, in other words, for the Sakya rasa, the parental rasa is inimical.
Yeah.
But for the parental rasa, the Sakya rasa is not.
Yeah.
It's neutral.
Yeah, it's neutral.
Right? So that's what I'm saying, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah. Yes. So now, then, the devotees in Sakya or in Vatsalya or in Madhurya, the different anubhavs that they experience, you know, then in the presence of inimical, then they will not be able to actually exhibit.
That's why it's called inimical.
Yeah.
Because the point is if the rasa can proceed freely, then that's when we consider it's in its natural state. If it's becoming inhibited by something, then to that degree, then it will be either friendly, neutral, or inimical.
Mm-hmm. So then in that case, you know, when two inimical rasas are together, we may not have the actual give and take or the vibhav taking place between the thing, but then it will be a mood, you know, the internal mood will remain.
Yeah, the internal mood will remain.
It remains.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It remains. It doesn't change. The point is it's just what takes precedence. That's all. So it's not that rasa with Krishna is not going on, it's just a matter of what becomes prominent. So, when Mother Jashoda is there, then everything becomes subservient to that. Does that make sense? So now let's say you have the cowherd boys, the bigger cowherd boys, and they bump into the gopis, and so then the conjugal rasa is there, but also then the sakya rasa is there, and then there's that fighting kind of mood. Right? But now when Krishna goes with the small cowherd boys, the really young ones, when he steals the clothes of the gopis, then the gopis is a neutral thing, because how are they going to get in the way of the rasa? They don't add to it. In fact, they tell them, you know, tell them to bring the clothes. You understand? So it's just a matter of that. That's why there's etiquette. Right? So for us, it will come down as etiquette. In here, it's rasa bas, you know, the proper flow of the rasas. But in these dealings, that comes across as etiquette. That's why, in the presence of seniors, then you deal in a particular way. As soon as they leave the room, like, you know, let's say everybody's there, it's very formal, the parents are there, and this and that, or, you know, the senior members of the family, and all that. But then at some point, they have to go for doing some particular work and all that, so they'll get up, everyone will this, that, and, you know, all the proper words. They'll leave the room, and hopefully, depending upon how cultured they are or not, they'll give it a few moments so they get far enough away. But as soon as they're out of the room, everyone just starts laughing, and, right? So that's just the way it works. So there's etiquette. But now if there's some noise and someone pokes their head back in, immediately quiet, formal. That's etiquette. That's why these modern things that, no, I can do whatever I feel like, that's all right for animals. That's what animals do. And then, therefore, it's just who's bigger than, you know, in other words, if they can eat you, then you're more respectful. You know, and if they can't, then who cares? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that this modern idea of I do whatever is good for me and all that is completely animalistic. So these principles of Dharma and all the etiquette that comes down from that is coming from the reflection from the spiritual world. Just here, it's still supposed to be applied in the proper way, just it becomes mundane. So even though, let's say, we reflect the culture of the spiritual world to the material world, and everything becomes reversed, right? Still, how it's supposed to be applied is the same way. But the spiritual application is full of rasa, while the material one is not that great. You understand? You know, Nanda Baba Jashoda, you know, Krishna, all the senior cowherd men and women, that family environment is very good. And in the material, they can be very distracted from Krishna consciousness. But it doesn't mean that even if it's mundane, it doesn't mean that it doesn't follow the rules. Because if they give up the rules, then they're not serving Krishna and not following the rules. Well, if they're following the rules, if you add Krishna, then everything goes very nice. If they're not following the rules, you add Krishna, they're benefited, but still they don't know how to behave in a cultured way. Right? That's why the culture is recommended, because then people can interact properly. Right? The idea is of all these different etiquettes is so that depending upon the situation, then who takes the prominence in the rasa?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. You see the difference between what's happening in the spiritual world, where you have the competing, and what's happening in the material world, where you also have competing, but the competing is about the person themselves, whereas in the spiritual world, the competing is about Krishna.
Yes, yes, but at the same time as I wouldn't make your position use Lord Brahma as how you say the weak point.
Okay.
You know, in other words, it stands on its own. We know about sweetness, the superiority of that over the opulence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's understood. So we don't have to put Brahma in the middle to prove our point. You know, because here you're dealing with Krishna's yoga maya. Because we have to remember that Brahma is an incarnation of the Lord. And so he represents the Lord in the mode of passion in the creation, the Hiranyagarbha aspect of the Lord. So his position is unassailable, but at the same time as then things are established, because otherwise if they're not established by these great personalities, then we'll consider they don't apply to us, because we consider ourselves such a great personality. So someone like Arjuna or Lord Brahma, we will on all accounts consider superior, right? But if we take someone else, we might not. So these great personalities, they perform all these things. So it's through the Lord's arrangement of the yoga maya. We shouldn't be putting so much emphasis on Brahma only is at this level of realization. It's a matter of through the influence of yoga maya, this level of realization is what's being manifest at this moment. Therefore, the pastime can take place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay, so you have the primary rasa. Secondary rasas may come up and become strong. But it's not that the primary rasa loses its position. It's just at a particular moment, something comes out and takes part in that. And then it goes back to its normal position whenever it's appropriate. Does that make sense? So, in a standard way, certain rasas aren't mixed, but one being prominent, the other one can support. As I said, then it's like santuries, santuri bhavas. They support the primary.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Lord Brahma prayed, I am simply surprised. Yet even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate, because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectar, nectarian intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. Right? Is that even though they don't have the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, all these as he says, the 11 presiding deities of the various senses, right? Because you have the five knowledge acquiring and the five how do you say, working senses, and then the mind. And so then you have the 11 deities there. Is even though they don't have the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, because they are in charge of the senses, when the senses are engaged in the Lord's service, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, where one is hearing about or being engaged like that, then they are able to taste that nectar of the sense of being engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So that's the specialness of what's going on. Does that make sense? So they're in that way they're involved. So one can't explain the greatness of the position of these devotees, but at the same time, they're getting the benefit because devotees use their senses in the Lord's service. So they being in control of the senses, they're also being engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that's why devotional service then benefits everyone. This idea that it's not benefiting anybody, or it's only this or that, or only if people like it or not. Totally mundane, uninformed, immature position. Because we see here is all living entities already serving Krishna. So even they're getting grumpy, is they're serving Krishna because they see Krishna, you know, in the form of their grumpiness. And so then they do their worship of grumpiness by being grumpy. And Krishna reciprocates as their grumpiness, their grumpy environment, and their grumpy associates. Does this make sense? So, the whole thing is what's actually going on is way, way greater than just what meets the eye. Because if we're working on just what meets the eye, then we're not actually seeing things very well. Right. We may have matured our, analytical abilities, our intellectual prowess, but in the process, we have lost that natural personal way of seeing things that the child has. So we can claim that we've matured, but we've lost that natural personal. Dealing and seeing that everything's alive, right? You know, you get a toy for a kid. It's just a car, okay. If they're bigger, it's got to be just a car. But if they're smaller, there's got to be eyes on the car. Because everything's personal. You know? You understand? So-called we gained, but at the same time we lost. My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth wherever in this forest of Gokula and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. The Vedic mantras just looking for that dust. And here the residents of Vrindavan, then that's all they're absorbed in. And so therefore the dust from their feet is what's of great benefit to anyone looking for the dust of Mukunda's feet. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Lord Brahma prayed, I am simply surprised. Therefore, with the fortunate position of Maharaj Nanda, Mother Jashoda, and the cowherd men and gopis, because you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, are existing here as their most intimate, lovable object. My dear Lord, no one can actually appreciate the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan. We are all demigods, controlling deities of the various senses of the living entities, and we are proud of enjoying such privileges. But actually, there is no comparison between our position and the position of these fortunate residents of Vrindavan, because they are actually relishing your presence and enjoying your association by dint of their sensory activities. We may be proud of being controllers of the senses, but here the residents of Vrindavan are so transcendental that they are not under our control. Actually, they are enjoying their senses through service to you. I shall therefore consider myself fortunate to be given a chance to take birth in this land of Vrindavan in any of my future lives. So the devotees engaging in the Lord's service, then the demigods who are in charge of the senses get that benefit. But the benefit that they're getting cannot be compared to the residents of Vrindavan and the glory of their position. Therefore, to just get some benefit, he's just playing that he just takes birth in any way in this land of Vrindavan and gets the dust from the lotus feet of such devotees.
Getting the dust of the lotus feet of the Vrindavasins implies following the footsteps.
Getting the dust means following the footsteps. Getting the dust means getting their mercy. If you follow in the first steps, then you get the mercy. Right? You know, it'd be like saying, does cooking mean eating? But by cooking, then you can eat. Is that like that? My dear Lord, I am therefore not interested in either material opulences or liberation. I am most humbly praying at your lotus feet for you to please give me any sort of birth within this Vrindavan forest so that I may be able to be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. Right, so by the grace of Krishna, one gets the blessings of the devotees. And by the blessings of the devotees, then one gets Krishna's mercy. If I am given the chance to grow as a humble blade of grass in this land, that would be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. So if he could be inside to be regularly, receive the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees, then that would be great. If he can't get that, then just outside, so that when they do go outside, at that time, then they step on it. Even that will be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet, because I can see that everyone here is simply full of Krishna consciousness. No one here knows anything but the lotus feet of Krishna or Mukunda, for which the Vedas themselves are searching. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of Vedic knowledge is to find Krishna, and it is stated in the Brahma Samhita that it is very difficult to find Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by systematic reading of the Vedic literature. But he is very easily available through the mercy of a pure devotee. Right? So just by going through very nicely, studying the scriptures how one should, you know, academically, doesn't ensure that you're going to catch Krishna. Right? So it's simply by the mercy of the devotees, the pure devotees, that's how you'll get Krishna's mercy. That's how we'll understand Krishna. So therefore, the study of the scriptures does understand the mood of the acharyas. Not to read the scriptures to get knowledge from there and from those devotees to use in our own way. Right? For our own purpose. We're studying the scriptures with the commentaries of the acharyas so that we may understand what's the appropriate mood. And with that, using, you know, the appropriate, what's the proper goals, what's the proper knowledge, how that knowledge is applied. Right? Then we're able to engage in devotional service and come to the platform of pure devotion. The pure devotees of Vrindavan are fortunate because they can see Mukunda, Lord Krishna, all the time. The difference between the pure devotees of Vrindavan and devotees in other places is that the residents of Vrindavan have no other desires but to be associated with Krishna. Krishna, being very kind to his devotees, fulfills their desire. Because they always want Krishna's association, the Lord is always prepared to give it to them. The devotees of Vrindavan are also spontaneous lovers. They are not required to strictly follow regulative principles because they are already naturally developed in transcendental love for Krishna. Right? You follow the rules because that's what's going to give you the benefit. Right? It's just like, let's say, one may say, okay, the residents of Vrindavan don't have to follow the rules, so the rules aren't actually what's important. But what is meant here by the rules? right? It's the secondary aspect. The primary aspect, they never leave that. Right? So it's just like, let's say, someone is cooking. You have two people that are cooking. Now, one is following the recipe, right? And they don't take the recipe very seriously. They don't know how to cook so good. The result's not going to be very good. So for them, the better, more exact they follow the recipe, the better result they'll get. Right? Because they're offering to Krishna. They want a good result. But now let's say someone knows very nicely the science of cooking. Do they need to follow the recipe? No. The recipe is a concept. That you're doing a particular kind of preparation, but how you could do the spicing, how you could do the different things with it, techniques, what you could add, what you subtract, depending upon what flavor you want to get, or what effect, they can do. That's not following the rules. They're not following the rule of the recipe, because the Shastra, can they write down all the unlimited aspects of bhakti? No, they write down the major ones that by us following. Just like if you're going to give new people recipes, you give them ones that they can follow. Right? You don't give really esoteric ones. So that's the whole point, is that it's just a matter of following. It's that the principles that are there are being followed by the good cook, even though they may not follow the detail of the recipe. Right? So that's the whole point. It doesn't mean it's whimsical and you do whatever you like. No, you're still following the perfect path of pure devotion. But it's not based on the rules. It's based on the expression of the devotion. And that devotion is what pleases the residents of Vrindavan. It's not that, oh, this is what I want to do. You have to choose what you want to do from what's available. You know, like you go, like we say, you go to the restaurant, you can choose what's on the menu. You can't go into the Italian restaurant and say, I'll take the enchiladas. Right? They're not on the menu. So that's how it works. Is that you have to choose what, that's what is there. Because the point is you have to fit into what you do. Right? The hammer can't decide that, yes, I'm going to stir the sabji today. Right? But it doesn't work like that. There's a nature. That nature then is by the taste that it does. Otherwise it's rasa bas. So when we're dealing at this level, then that so-called, you know, that whimsicality is just rasa bas. Because we find how often does it work. People just do what they like and how successful it is. Right? On rare occasions. That's because what they did matched a certain flavor. And then when they try to replicate it, then they try to replicate it. Here. The person does something spontaneous or whimsical, actually. But, you know, for just discussion, let's say it's, you know, like this. So now it got a very good result. Let's say everybody laughed or everybody was excited or like that. Now, later, the same opportunity comes up. Now what happens? Does it have that spontaneity that it did the first time? No. Now they try to follow the form that they did before. So they ritualize their whimsicality. You know, that whimsicalness that they have, they formalize it. So now it becomes vaidhi. And then now they can't understand why no one laughed. Why didn't that? Because it's just a ritual. Right? Because the first time, just that spirit of whatever it was, enthusiasm, you know, in whatever area, that was truly there. So that's why it worked. But now they try to use the form without that enthusiasm, it doesn't work in that situation. Why? Because that endeavor with the environment doesn't match. So that environment has a more prominent thing that you have to consider, time, place, and circumstance. While the other is because of this, the enthusiastic mood, that took the predominance, because everyone's trying to be enthusiastic. That took the predominance, so even though the activity was performed was different than would be standard in that environment or that scenario, it still worked because the primary aspect of enthusiasm was being served. But the next time, it's the enthusiasm is not there, therefore the environment will dictate what could be done. Does this make sense? So people who talk about just doing whatever you want to do, then whenever they feel like it, but the point is if it doesn't actually have some connection to the environment, it's just going to be a trouble. Because when they say, I just, you know, be spontaneous, it's about what's spontaneous to them. Somebody else is being spontaneous and they don't like it. So, yes. No, it can't be just about us, because the point is we will consider the lowest of relationships to just be about us. Right? Well, it'll always be categorized. If you have something being done for yourself or something being done for others, something being done for others is always going to be higher. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the whole consideration. So that we are in an environment that preaches pranamoy, that it's all about the extended everybody and everybody together and everyone equally. But at the same time, for economic reasons and all that, then you preach about the individual and how they just get their own benefit and don't care about anybody else. How do these two go together? Right? So here is rasa vas. They don't work. It's not that they're so great that it works. You know, you catch the mood and all that. Just like, let's say, we're going to Calcutta, big billboard is there. I forget what it was that they were selling, you know, advertising. It was some kind of edible thing. I think I've seen it on a few different companies. But basically, is you have something so good that you do not want to share it. Right? So you have the father there and he's got like a bag of chips or some biscuits or some kind of this, I don't, you know, whatever it is. And he's there kind of hunching his shoulders in, leaning over, trying to hold onto the bag, and his wife and kids are attacking him, trying to get it from him. Right? So that's one advertisement. Another one is they're all at the table eating whatever's a standard thing, and he's kind of over on the side with them in the background with this all-knowing smile on his face, eating something that's different. And they're all kind of, what's going on over there? You understand? So, in the point of just the enthusiasm and that, you know, the funniness that's kind of there, in that self-centered kind of thing, then that makes it, you kind of, you appreciate that. But if you actually look at it, is that going to make a family unit work, that everybody is, you know, everybody for themselves? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it doesn't work. You can say so it has a flavor that it's just for that thing, but then the problem is it starts to break down. Why would you use that? If it breaks down family values and relationships, what have you gained? Because you have to remember, you sold things based on breaking down family relationships. What's the quality of that money that you get? It will carry that karma. What will it do? It'll break down your family relationships. Does that make sense? So, therefore, certain things just aren't done, even though they might work. Right? So in the scenario of making an amusing advertisement, it may work. But then the problem comes is it breaks down the standard things. Does that make sense? So that's why this admixture of rasas, it has to be according to what the acharyas say. That's why when we study what they say, we catch their mood. What is important? What is done at what time? How it's done? What are the actual results? What are the real results of bhakti? Right? That's then what we take. And all other things, they're actually, factually, unimportant. Because we may say, no, they're important, but that importance has kept us in the material world since time immemorial. So actually, how important is it? And what the acharyas are giving is something that in one lifetime you can go back to Godhead. So if you put those compared to each other, unlimited money, or one paisa? Which do you want? No, but this one paisa has been in our family for generations. Yeah, keep your one paisa. Yeah. In fact, we're exaggerating when you say paisa. Traditionally, then, one paisa was divided into 11 kodis. Right, a kodi is these little, you know, when you go down to the beach, like in Puri, you have these little dinky, like spirally, they look like a conch shell, but they're real, real small. They're like about three quarters of a centimeter or a centimeter long. Right? Those little things. So 11 of those make a paisa. Right? And you can pick those up on the beach. Right? Of course, if we're dealing in kodis, everyone goes and picks them up, so there's not as many around. But the point is, so you can say is because it's an old antique thing is, yes, you know, this little box of kodis, this was, you know, my great-grandfather, he had these, and, you know, does that make sense? And so now we're fighting over kodis when you're being offered unlimited wealth on the other side. All you have to do is give up the kodis. No, I want both. You can't have both. Yes?
And following the regulative principles for pleasing Krishna is a balanced approach. Otherwise, it will lead us to two extremes, you know, either following the sake of following.
It means a balanced approach to following the regulative principles. Krishna. Yes, it means it's about you're following the rules to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. If you're following the rules because the rule is important, or you're trying to please Krishna without following the rules, both of these are on either side of the razor's edge. They're not on the razor's edge. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So that's what you're trying to do. That's the things you're trying to establish, that Krishna is the most important, but you express that through the standard process. Yeah. Right? But the process is only of value because it's connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So from this, then you get these two extremes. See, it's all about following the process. No, it's about following the process connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And then you say, but if you just follow all this without pleasing Krishna, what's the use? Then they'll say, see, we don't need the process. We just need that sentiment of we're doing whatever I feel like at the moment to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So that way you end up with the, established religious process, and those who are, protesting against that religious process. So you have both sides of the... They both miss the point. Is that what it is? Yeah.
I have a question, sir.
Yes, yes.
See, we've all come here from different places.
Okay? Right.
It's very easy to involve Krishna when you are in Mayapur.
Right.
When we go back to our houses, our professional life, sometimes we get swayed away.
Right.
It happens to everybody. When we are here, we follow Krishna's steps, then we do Hare Krishna, Jap, everything.
Right.
But when we go back to our country or where we come from, and there is a different world out there, then what should be the essence of which we should carry with us when we go back? How to follow that, how to make that life easier for us.
The essence is that world is also Krishna's world. It's just that there they don't know it. So everything there works according to Krishna's laws. So you can see Krishna in everything. Say professional life, but how does the profession work? You can't just do whatever you want. Right? You know, let's say you're in the court and you stand up to make your presentation and you say, well, according to according to Gilbert and Sullivan, then is it going to work? No. So that's the whole point, you know. All right. So that's the thing, is that whatever you're doing, it has to be according to the established laws. Where the law? Why do the laws work? It's what work. It means why are they established? Because it works. Because you see, if a law works, it's actually in line with God's laws. It stands. But if it's not, then people will come up with it, but very soon it will fall out of disuse, because it won't work. You understand? So the point is everything you're seeing is Krishna's potency in everything. And so that way then you can see Krishna in whatever you're doing. Whatever you value, know that the value is actually Krishna, not the secondary form that you're looking at it from. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say you have a nice car. So, and why have a nice car? Because in a professional life, if the car is not nice, people don't take you seriously. So therefore it's a matter of prestige. So, but prestige is Krishna, not the car. The car is a hunk of metal and with some rubber. Like that, you know. And if you doubt that, come back after 10 years and see what it is. You know, it's like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you could say is the ambassador is the actual nature of the car, because it looks like it actually is. All other cars will look like that, you know. Because I think it was Bhavananda Prabhu was saying, he was talking with someone and they were talking about how bad Calcutta is and this and that. He says, no, it's actually the cutting city, you know, in the world. It's on the cutting edge. It's the cutting edge city of the world. And all the other devotees, what are you talking about? It's the worst, most dirtiest, funkiest, falling apart, you know, dysfunctional city in the world. Like that. And so then, that's of course because they've never met Karachi. But, you know, like this. So then he said, no, in another 50 years, every city on the planet will look like Calcutta. So it's ahead of its time. It's ahead of its time. Right? You understand? So the whole point is the Vedic standard, that's how everything works anyway. We call it a different world simply because people see it that way. But the reality, it still works according to Krishna's laws. Right? Like the children, when they go into their room, they see their room from a different perspective. It's not part of the rest of the house. You know what I'm saying? You know, Barbie and Ken are having marriages, there's, you know, unicorns flying around, there's all kinds of important things happening like that. But in reality, it's, you know, it's time for breakfast, and so then it's time to, you know, come to the table. You know what I'm saying? 760. Okay.
Regulatory principles are required for last 4 months.
Regulatory principles are required for persons who have not achieved such a position of spontaneous love. Brahma is also a devotee of the Lord, but he is an ordinary devotee subject to following regulative principles. He prays to Krishna to give him the chance to take birth in Vrindavan so he might be elevated to the platform of spontaneous love. Right? So the rules and regulation have to be followed by those who don't have spontaneous love. It's not that by following a whimsical method that will develop it. That's not how it happens. Right? It doesn't happen like that. You know, it's just like you have the idea is if I just get some canvas or that, and I just, you know, throw some paint around and walk on it, ride my bicycle over it, you know, let the dog go play on it, and that, then I'll come up with some Picasso or something. But the problem is Picasso had a formal training. That's why Picasso's paintings are Picasso's. And the other guy's stuff is, you know, if the community hall will agree to hang it on their walls, okay, then it gets used. Otherwise, it ends up in the garage. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that it's only through the formal training that you can get to the informal. The difference is what's the goal? So you follow the formal training and your goal is formal, then that's Vaikuntha, it stays that way. You follow the formal training, your goal is Vrindavan, then it becomes that way. But the point is without formal training, how does anything learn? It can't be. That's the position. So Lord Brahma is praying that I may be able to come to that position. Right? So he's taking the position of the ordinary devotee. Right? He's Acharya, so he sets the example. Lord Brahma continued, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. Right? So you make an endeavor, you get a reward for your endeavor. But he's becoming bewildered trying to think of any other reward that's better than Krishna. Because what you're getting is actually Krishna, but we see the secondary form as the reward. But actually it's the primary form that's the reward. But that primary form is just an aspect of Krishna. So then having Krishna, the person, interact with you, you can't get a higher reward than that. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disgusting self, or for her disguising herself as a devotee. Right? She just disguised herself as a devotee and she got Krishna. Like that. You know. But you have to remember, she was sincerely disguising herself. So, what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? So, if Putana got such a benefit for just this slight aspect of making arrangements and rendering service, because the service rendered was proper, right? Then after that she went a bit, you know, whimsical. It left the natural position. And she got so much benefit. So then what is the position of the residents of Vrindavan, where everything about themselves and connected to themselves is surrendered to Krishna? Right? That's the whole point. Narada Muni makes that point in the 7th canto. Is that you have all these demons who are inimically approaching Krishna, and from that they get elevated to Vaikuntha. So anything connected to the Lord is a benefit. All is always a benefit. But if you perform these activities in pure devotion, then how much more benefit is there? So that's the...
Can we categorize that the bhakti performed by devotees is direct devotional service, and that when performed by asuras is indirect devotional service?
By?
The asuras. Like
the asuras is indirect devotional service.
On the Lord, but it's not favorable.
But why would you use the category of direct and indirect here? Because then the devotees, let's say, the devotee is engaging his house in Krishna's service, that's indirect. You know, that's how we've been using it. I'm just asking, why would you want to use... What's the concept of using direct and indirect in that way? Why not favorable and unfavorable? Because the point is that it's directed at the Lord, so you get benefit. Right? Just like the materialists, then it's indirect and unfavorable, but because they're worshipping the Lord in that capacity, as that mundane thing, they're getting the result in that mundane thing. So that's the point. All benefit comes from the Lord. Everything's connected to the Lord. So those who don't know, they're still getting their material benefit because they're worshipping the Lord as that material benefit. Those who then are inimical to the Lord, then they're getting the results of that being inimical to the Lord. But it's in connection with the Lord. Then those who are favorable in connection with the Lord, then they'll get the best benefit. So all living entities get all their benefit from the Lord. Because in all aspects you can see the primary and secondary. So I wouldn't necessarily use that as the formula. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Lord Brahma continued, these residents of Vrindavan have given you everything, their bodies, their minds, their loves, their homes, their professions. Everything is being utilized for your purpose. So how will you be able to repay your debt to them? Right? Because the other person, what have they put in? The person puts in, he sees, he's worshipping Krishna as economics. He's putting the effort into his business or economic endeavor. So, how does Krishna repay? By economics, and to what degree?
Whatever
effort he put in. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's just an equal thing. But then these devotees of Vrindavan, how they've surrendered everything. Right? Even Vaikuntha, they're surrendered. They're pure devotees, but the aspect of liberation is there. Transcendental liberation. So he reciprocates on those platforms. But the residents of Vrindavan have sacrificed everything, even liberation and all that, just to please Krishna. What's there to give? What's left? Because they've given up everything for Krishna. So that means it's just for Krishna. So what can Krishna give? Only himself. Because he is the summum bonum of all benedictions, right? Others approach for a particular benediction. He reciprocates on that benediction. But they've given up all benedictions just to please Krishna. So the only reciprocation is Krishna, who is all benedictions. Does this make sense? Yeah. You have already given yourself to Putana. I surmise that you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. Their loving service. That's why Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. My Lord, I can understand that the super excellent quality of the service rendered by the residents of Vrindavan is due to their spontaneously engaging all natural instincts in your loving service. It is said that attachment for material objects and home is due to illusion, which makes a living entity conditioned in the material world. But this is only the case for persons who are not Krishna conscious. In the case of the residents of Vrindavan, such obstructions as attachment to hearth and home are non-existent, because their attachment has been directed onto you, and their homes have been converted into temples by your constant presence there, and because they have forgotten everything for your sake, there is no impediment, right? Because we have impediments. We deal in the material world, they are impediments to the devotional service because we see them separately from Krishna. But here Brahma is pointing out that the residents of Vrindavan see nothing as separate from Krishna. So where's any impediment? It's all about simply trying to please Krishna. Right? Because they're Krishna then is practicing living the lifestyle of the human being. So human being follows then the culture as given in the Vedas. And so therefore their houses, clothes, how they do things, how they cook, how they eat, how they interact, the relationships, all those things are defined. So they're only, because Krishna is living in that way, they engage all those things in Krishna's service. Because all those things then become pleasing to Krishna. Because that's his pastime. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So there is no impediment. There is nothing existing that can get in the way of their devotion. Because for them, it's all just for Krishna. Yeah.
Recently, one senior devotee was telling for the Brajavasis to enjoy the pastime of Govardhan Leela. They are staying 7 days and seven nights. So when Indra is doing all this, they never thought about what is happening behind to their homes, to their land, to their water, grains in there. They just forgot about it. Yeah. So that is why they could get that 7 days.
Yes, yes. Because they were so absorbed in Krishna. Yeah, very nice. Could all hear? For a Krishna conscious person, there's no such thing as impediments due to attachment for hearth and home, nor is there illusion. Right? Because they're attached to Krishna, so where's the illusion? Illusion is when you're not attached to Krishna. So that degree you're not attached to Krishna, to that degree you're an illusion. And to that degree you're attached to Krishna, to that degree you're not an illusion, you're in Krishna consciousness. So if there's no illusion, what's to distract you from Krishna, since it's all Krishna anyway? Right? It's all to be used in Krishna's service. Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord Krishna, Until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Footnote 32. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 36 to Bhagavad Arkramichi Mala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukul Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. So, giving up these things, that's what's favorable. Seeing everything in connection to Krishna. Right? Because the devotees, then they see all these as the opposite. And at the same time, is thinking like this about material life becomes favorable. Right? If you think that all of your material attachments, desires are like thieves, are taking everything away, because you could do so many nice things for Krishna, but because of material attachment, you're being distracted from that. So they're like thieves. So being able to understand that, think like that, and try to endeavor in that way, that's favorable. Right? And that, and their homes remain prisons because they're attached to their homes, they're connected to their homes. So the home itself becomes the place where their greatest attachment to the material energy takes place, because there then, that's where everything is together. Right? You go out, then how much do you take with you? Right? Is it the... every day... I can't remember, EDC. Every day. Huh? No, every day. It's what you... everyday carry. You know, what you take with you. You know, you have your bag, you have your wallet, you have this, you have that, you know, your umbrella, whatever it is. That you take that with you, but then you go back to your house, right? And then your house and that and your car and everything is all there in one place. So that's where your shackles are. That right? Means that's the prison, right? And then what keeps you in that prison, right? Because is the shackles of the feelings for family members, right? Because you have a prison. What's to keep people from breaking out? It's the shackles, right? So you're in prison and you're in shackles, right? And then whatever you have there, then your desires are like thieves that are taking everything away. So being able to see like that and appreciate like that, that's favorable to devotional service. Because otherwise, then, if we think that you know, no, but all these things, my desires and my attachments, that's what's really making, you know, filling out my devotional service. And my home, you know, it's just, this is how, you know, we're all engaged in Krishna's service so nicely and everything like that. And the relationship with the family, they're all devotees, so I'm attached to devotees, so this is great devotional service. That's not going to be favorable. Right? Means, if it's like the Brajabasis, that's actually how it is, then fine. But if it's not, then better one sees that, yes, one has these attachments, they distract you from devotional service. Then you're able to engage that, because if you're distracted by that, not engaging in devotional service, then what should you do? Right? Get in your car and drive off into the sunset and never come back? Problem is if you keep driving, you'll end up back, you know, in front of your house again if you just drive long enough. Right? So that's not the point. No, the point is engage everything in Krishna's service. In other words, if I see the house as my house, I have to see it as Krishna's house. I see the family members as mine, and for my enjoyment, I have to see it as Noah's. I assist and help them in being Krishna conscious. Right? All my material desires, and I connect them all to Krishna, see that they're all engaged in Krishna's service. Does this make sense? Then that becomes favorable. Then it's useful. But if you don't see like that, then one will be distracted. Yeah.
So the sannyasis you mentioned are the impersonalists, not the mentality of sannyas.
Yes. Because sannyas means that it's Krishna's. Right? Now let's say... it's my house, and then now and again I use it for Krishna, now and again I remember it's Krishna, so at that time I have that offering to Krishna. That's renunciation. But if the idea is the house is just for Krishna's service, so everything that goes on is just about Krishna, that's sannyas. So when Brahma always talks about the jnanis, you know, and the renunciates like that, then he means those who aren't devotees. Because technically any devotee, you know, the proper mood of pure devotion is sannyas. Right? Renunciation is the process to get to that position. So it's just that if one formally takes, accepts the ashram of sannyas, then that's just help to get there. It's not that it's already there. It's you could say the most straightforward. Because point is one gets bewildered by volume. Right? So therefore, the less you have, the less to get distracted by. That's the value of it. That's why it's seen as a superior ashram. Because grihastha life, it's like you have all the things that you use, then you have all the things that you could possibly use, then you have all the things that you thought you could possibly use, but you actually don't use. And all that's together in one place, and each one gets more than the last. Right? So people need these huge houses and garages, and you have, you know, these, what do you call it? You know, the storage? You know, you can hire places, storage. That's because it just keeps getting bigger. Right? So if the sannyas is supposed to cut down on all that to just what you use, and then now and again it'll be something you think you can use, then you figure out you can't, so you give it away. Right? And those things that stick, that's what you use. So it just makes it easier. But the principle is if you actually understand everything's Krishna's, it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, in the forest, Grihe Tako Bani Tako, right? Yes, Sadahari. Boli Tako. I think it comes up a few times in a few places.
Bhakti
Vinod
Thakur has got 11 children, but all are engaged.
Yes.
Krishna consciousness. He's thinking his house is like Vakti.
Yes. But don't just go, well, he has 11 children, so I should have 11 children. Don't do that. And so I'm like Bhakti Vinod Thakur. No, that's don't take the secondary. Take it. He's Krishna conscious, so even his children are all. Yeah. that way, we have to be careful in that way. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Jainatai Gaurapingla.